no matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter where you are right now. You are welcome here. Welcome to Daily Audio Bible Chronological. I'm Jill. Today is the 29th day of October. It's so good to be here with you. I'm thrilled that you're here, that you're allowing the Word of God to speak. I pray that you are deepening your understanding, your knowledge, your wisdom of who God is, your relationship with God, to know God for who He is Himself and to be known by God. And we know how He sees us through His Word. Well done. It's a really good thing that you're here. Today we continue in the Gospels reading John, the 11th chapter. And this week we are reading the New Revised Standard Version Updated Edition. John, chapter 11. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill, so the sisters sent a message to Jesus. Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and you are going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them. After saying this, he told them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right. Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would have not died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, where have you laid him? they said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the council and said, "What are we to do? This man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation." But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. You do not understand that it is better for you to have one man die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed." He did not say this on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was about to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but to gather into one the dispersed children of God. So from that day on, they planned to put him to death. Jesus therefore no longer walked about openly among the Jews, but went from there to a town called Ephraim, in the region near the wilderness, and he remained there with the disciples. Now the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus, and were asking one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think? Surely he will not come to the festival, will he?" Now the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that anyone who knew where Jesus was should let them know, so that they might arrest him. Today we read the story of Jesus and his friend Lazarus, and we understand this man named Jesus to be both fully God and fully man. But yet our minds can't quite comprehend that. Or I'll just speak for myself. My mind can't fully comprehend both fully God and fully man. But yet we see something that I think is so beautiful and so encouraging today. There's so many details of the story we could point out, but for time's sake, Jesus is basically ridiculed that if he would have been where they wanted him to be, his friend wouldn't have died. This would have never happened if he would have just done what they wanted him to do. I could just pause there. We could all just sit with that for a second. Maybe we could all relate a little bit. But I want to go on. Jesus goes to his friend and he has to know what he's about to do. Now, I get that's an assumption on my part. There's no proof that would suggest that. But we read in other miracles that Jesus perceived his healing that went out from him when the woman with the issue of blood touched his garment. We don't even know that he didn't know who touched her. Maybe he just wanted her to admit her need. But he perceived his healing power went out from him. That's either conducive to the story, or we can assume that Jesus knew he was going to call forth his friend and raise him from the dead. And yet Jesus stood at the tomb of his friend and he cried. He showed real human emotion. This man of compassion and grace and mercy, we have watched him go to the adulterous woman. We have watched him go to a woman who was carrying her dead child while he was passing by. We have seen him stop because he is moved by compassion. And now we see this sorrow, this grief from this man who is both fully God and fully man. This is so beautiful. We can never say that God does not understand how we feel. We can never accuse him of not knowing what we're going through. Jesus more than likely has felt and experienced every human emotion possible while he was on earth. Betrayal, deceit, jealousy, rage, anger. I'm thinking of stories in my mind to pull the emotions from example, and I'm sure I could go on. Unfortunately, I'm not naming too many happy ones because this man is so mistreated in his lifetime, but yet today it's so beautiful to see him stand at the grave of his friend and weep. He is with us. It is possible that he sits with us in our pain and our sorrow. It is possible that he sheds real tears with us when we are hurting. As a parent, we do not watch our children hurt and walk away and reject them. But we stand with them when we can't do anything else. If we tell them, "Tell me where it hurts." And if we are doing even better, we tell them, "Tell me where I hurt you." And we don't let them hurt alone. We don't let them cry alone. And I know sometimes they choose their own pain and they take roads that we warned them about, that we told them, "I did that, don't go down that road." And they still have to go. They still insist on going and experiencing it themselves, just like we did. But we welcome them back every time as we read the story of the prodigal son coming home. And we rejoice when they come home, and them coming home is not them adapting to our mindset. It is loving them and accepting them for who they are as an individual. And I know some of you are experiencing the heartache of yours who didn't make it back home. And I sit with you and I weep with you. And I don't think it's too far off that Jesus sits and weeps with us. We are not alone. He has experienced everything that we could possibly feel. He knows and he cares. So Jesus, we thank you for who you are. Thank you that we are never alone, that you understand. We think we have been treated unfairly and unjustly, and some have terribly, but no one knows cruelty brutality and injustice more than you. Jesus, forgive us for thinking that you don't care and that you don't know. And I pray that we would have the same compassion to those that moved you to the broken. May we have that same compassion for our own selves that would lift us from the shame that we carry and that would lead us to the healer of our brokenness. We thank you and we praise you and we love you. And I pray this all in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, in the name of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Welcome to another episode, edition, installment of whatever this thing is.
With Brian and Jill.
I'm Jill.
I'm Brian.
And we are coming to you from...
the island of Crete.
Crete.
Crete. Way down below mainland Greece. And like yesterday, we were a long way from here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the last couple of days, wow, we have just experienced a lot of intensity, but and a lot of travel, but man.
Well, yesterday was a full day of travel.
Man. But what beauty. I mean.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it's hard to believe in the amount of time that we've experienced so much. And it's like we've been saying all along, like, it's just got to process.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday morning, do you remember where we were?
We were on, let's just have a brief moment in honor of Patmos.
Yes.
The island of Patmos. Who knew it could be so lovely?
Who knew that it could? You're right. So quiet, so beautiful, so different, so...
Serene.
Yeah.
Tranquil.
Yeah.
Lovely.
All those things. And especially, like, what happened there? You know, the book of the Bible that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So that's, I guess that's where we start, because that's where we left off. Like, we couldn't do whatever this is with Brian and Joe yesterday, because we were literally traveling until 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's no exaggeration. We had a 6-hour boat ride and then 2 flights.
To get from Patmos to Crete. So I guess we can talk about that in a minute, but let's talk about Patmos. We got up and woke up on the island of Patmos.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a guide to kind of take us through the important... I mean, Patmos is little. It's a 7-mile long island by like 3 miles wide at its widest. And so it's just a little island. And this is where John was exiled and where he received... revelation that became known as the Revelation of John, or the Apocalypse of John, or the Book of Revelation. And
minus the S.
Minus the S. Revelations, yeah.
And we could not have had a more lovely and perfect, perfect may be the wrong word, lovely and I don't know. Find the right word. Guide.
Yeah.
That took us around Patmos.
Yeah, just, you know, very creative, very artistic, very philosophical, very... the right way to maybe approach the time that we had.
Yes.
In the way that we needed. As opposed to, like, you know, facts and figures, it was more... just a lot to think about, without kind of providing all kinds of answers, I guess. I don't know. She was the right one. It was what we needed, and it was great.
Yeah.
So we get up in the morning. Gosh, that was yesterday morning.
It was yesterday morning.
And
we started at 9 a.m.
Yeah, we met her, and off we went, and we kind of wound up this mountain and went to what is called the Cave of the Apocalypse. And what this is a cave where John kind of stayed in exile while on Patmos, and where it's believed that he received the revelation that is known as the Book of Revelation. So, I don't know. So, we're walking. It's a beautiful morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of people there. It's not overrun. It's quiet enough to hear the birds.
The view is spectacular.
Yeah, just share what it was like to kind of go there. What was it like to go there for you?
Well, I think we have these places that are completely unexpected. And, well, I mean, you can even expect... You can research as much as you want to and think that you have an idea of, you know, what you're walking into or what you're about to experience, but from place to place, the characteristics are so vastly different. Like, even, you know, driving today, you turn a corner and the landscape is completely different.
Yep.
So we're talking about the island of Patmos that is very... not heavily populated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sea driven, boat lifestyle, biking, etc., etc. But we get to the Cave of the Apocalypse, as you said, and we just timed it perfectly. There was nobody there. We got there and she gave us just such a beautiful rundown of John's revelation, because there was a mass taking place within the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
So it was intentional to buy a little bit of time to let them finish the mass so that we could enter. But I don't know. I don't know how to unload or unpack the things that she said, other than to say the night before, mm-hmm. you and I were laying on the bed,
mm-hmm.
having our talk about whatever this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of set an intention. Right?
Yeah.
And you said that it was a very young place inside of your heart that... I can't remember exactly what you said. Do you remember?
I mean, we were just talking about the fear that some of the apocalyptic stuff, especially Revelation, brought us in our childhood because of the way that it was laid out. And I was just mm-hmm. saying, you know, I'm kind of bringing those places with me, and it wasn't like a fear thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because read Revelations and studied Revelations plenty, but I don't know. It was a mythic place in my childhood mind. And so to kind of bring that part of me into the actual experience of being really where this happened. I don't know. I just felt it.
Yeah. And so I think, the safest way for me to unpack this is to say that this is a place I would never normally want to explore because of my relationship with the Book of Revelation
mm-hmm.
and my young life.
The misuse.
Yes. Still having unraveled it and not raveling it back up yet. Just because I'm not going to force anything that I don't quite know and don't quite understand. And so because of that, it's just not a place that I would ever say, yeah, I'm going to chase that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go after that. I'm going to go find that. But we're here, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
But what I knew was, okay, I'm going to go into this, and whatever I learn is what I learn.
Right.
And I hope to learn something that might give me perspective or understanding. But I am not going in with fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking fear of hell off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of missing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, I mean, I could get into the details, but like there was a whole thing of like, I knew the formula. If I miss the rapture, I have to choose to get my head chopped off.
Same.
And that's really scary as a child.
I mean, I've talked about it before, like being scared to death that the rapture was going to happen and I would get stuck on the ceiling.
Oh, I know.
That's and I'd be able
so
to get
precious
I'd be able to
and
get
innocent.
Through. So, yeah.
And any time that I would even gasp, you know, like I can remember time is walking in and the TV's on and I can't find anybody in the house and I like run to the garden and I always was like, I will call my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma's the test.
Mm-hmm.
If grandma doesn't answer, I'm like, I'm really screwed. But anyways, I was going in with no fear of any of that.
Yeah.
That's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that I can describe what I experienced yesterday was I was in a safe zone.
Yeah.
I was in a safe zone and both, I mean, I'm not exaggerating this. You can attest and testify that both of the things that we set intentionally here in not this space, it was a different bed in a different city.
Mm-hmm.
Were completely, specifically addressed and touched on.
Yeah.
Like she literally said, young places of your heart. And she talked about understanding love on a level, agape love, a Greek word, agape, where there is no fear.
Yeah.
No conditions, no records, no scores. And that is the goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when we say that at times, people want to put a label on it. They want to put it in categorically, call it something it's not, frou-frou, hippie, I don't know. It's like, it's like we can't just acknowledge the fact that it could be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's hard to acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a hard thing to understand how to love in that capacity, but it's not hard to figure out that it truly does come down to that. The mm-hmm. love of God, agape, is the way that we are to love one another without conditions, without score, without record, without fear. And that was the message that I took away.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving a whole lot out of what she said.
I mean, this is no way to... I guess it was like Greek Orthodox mysticism, basically.
It really was.
And a very spiritual approach to the text. And not that we went through the entire text at all. Just kind of, there was just some things that were like, okay, wow, that is good. That is helpful. That is a unique and good way to approach all of this, like you said. And so, yeah, that happened. And then we went into the cave. Was that in, like, what was that like for you?
The cave?
Yeah. Was there anything unique about it? I mean, she had said all kinds of stuff that, you know, comes down through the Christian tradition that she's in. And here in Greece, like 97% of the people are Orthodox, Greek Orthodox. So, mm-hmm. you know, things that are maybe part of the tradition that aren't specifically laid out in the Bible, as far as, like, you know, Jesus appearing to John in the cave and then the cave splitting. Because there are splits in that cave, in that rock. But mm-hmm. just all, you know, the whole narrative of the story is like, wow, okay. I don't agree, disagree, whatever. Like, it's just like, wow. I can, everything in that cave has a symbolic meaning, just like the book of Revelation does. Mm-hmm. And so, right down to where, you know, John was leaning and, you know, maybe where he even put his hand to steady himself, and yeah. as he's like receiving all this, and it's quite striking, actually. And so I mean, on the one hand, you can go like, we're in a cave. On the other hand, you go like, wow, a whole book of the Bible came from this cave, and it's been a riveting book of the Bible.
Riveting, controversial, confusing. I mean, there's a lot of trauma for a lot of people around that book, to be honest.
Yeah.
Some people have it completely figured out, that's great. The cave, how was it being in the cave? I thought the cave was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very... the atmosphere that we walked into was very contemplative. Mm-hmm. And they had just had a mass, so it was, you know, the incense was burning, and it was, the stage was set, so it was... I loved it.
I did too.
There were just a few people in there. Very reverent. People were very reverent that were in there. I love that. I had a Sunday school teacher whose favorite word was reverence. Mm. And she taught us that God loves reverence. And I've never forgot that. And I feel like we've gotten pretty casual sometimes.
Yeah.
And we have lost a lot of reverence. So there's a lot of reverence within the ancient and the traditions. And so that was lovely to experience.
I agree. I loved it. Like, I don't want to overstate or understate. It was a moving experience on a beautiful island that came as a very big surprise and completely unexpected. And it's, you know, it's in the pile of things to process.
Sure.
But I think some of those things are going to stick. And I'm grateful for it. Grateful that we went there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's new insight and understanding to come from it. And so I'm grateful. And it was just beautiful, like, just in general, the way that it's accessible,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of the grounds and how ancient they are, and how far these traditions go back, and how long people have been coming to that island. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Let me say one more thing that she said that was really profound.
and I think that will have some meaning here. She was talking about how Jesus told us to love our neighbor as ourselves. And she was saying that the things that keep us from being able to love our neighbor as ourself is that we identify the things with our neighbor that is wrong with them, that we are so critical of, but that we are not willing to look at our own self.
Yeah.
And see.
Right.
Therefore, that causes us to keep them at arm's length, like at a distance.
Largely because we don't want to deal with it in ourselves.
Exactly. And that truly made me think about the wording all throughout the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes to see.
Mm-hmm.
Ears to hear.
Right.
It's not a matter of getting to the people that haven't heard yet or haven't seen yet. It is that internal look that we all have to be willing to take within ourselves.
Yeah.
And what really struck me about that was when I went to my intense therapy,
mm-hmm.
that I left, had to leave home and go do for 5 days. They warned me of a concept called, if you spot it, you've got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like the things that you see in other people that you'll call out,
mm-hmm.
that you'll be irritated about or whatever. All they can do is like challenge you with.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in yourself,
right,
that you see that is bothering you about that? And when my therapist said that, I was like, well, okay then.
Yeah.
Let me just sit here in the corner and suck my thumb for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Different wording, but same concept all the way around.
Yeah.
So that was very profound. And yeah, just some things that she said hit a very tender places of my heart, and
yeah, me too,
moved me,
mm-hmm.
greatly. And they weren't, yeah, I didn't walk away with, oh, I get the book of Revelation now.
No, but it was not even really specifically connected to specific pieces. It was kind of more global approach. And yeah,
but it was also just kind of a unique experience of the hot air balloon ride.
Mm-hmm.
Not biblical, but completely spiritual.
Yeah. So, we left there. And there's like one other place on the island that's really important. And that is like the monastery of St. John.
Mm-hmm.
And that was built like in the 10th century. And it's massive. And it's got massive walls. And there, like, there's nowhere you cannot see it, basically, from the island or from the sea. Like, if you're close enough, like, it is, you can't miss it. Its walls are imposing. And
imposing.
Yeah, we were just kind of telling her about the community here, and so she kind of got it right away and was taking us to all kinds of places that, because we weren't in this large group or anything, that we could get to. And so we got to take this kind of walking tour up to, on the top of this mountain with windmills, and it was windy, and it was, mm-hmm. man, the view was amazing. And then walking through the neighborhoods that lead up to the monastery, and this entire area, including the neighborhood and the houses, are like a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And just walking through the little alleyways and twisting and turning our way.
Yeah.
That was so, I mean, that was so much better than just rolling up into the parking lot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Little shops that she was friends with, and just a small island. Everyone kind of knows everyone, and You're so sleepy.
I'm sorry, everybody. I was like yawning without trying to make a sound.
I just gave you away. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Everybody, the suggestion of yawning should make like 10,000 people yawn right now. Let's just have a yawn.
And that they won't be able to stop.
Because yawning is contagious. So have your yawn with me. I had my yawn.
Just don't fall asleep.
I'm not going to fall asleep.
Okay.
We have so much ground to cover. So we went into we haven't even got off Patmos yet.
Oh, we got to hurry and walk through Patmos here.
So we went to the... yeah, we really do, actually. So we went to the monastery and wound our way through it. And we've been to a lot of monasteries on this trip because a lot of just early Christianity and monasticism kind of comes as a beat later after, you know, after some of the things that happened in the Book of Acts and all. And so this is a beautiful monastery. I love going to monasteries.
Me too.
I love the serene atmosphere. I love the feeling of spirituality where people have really dedicated themselves to seeking God and living with a rule of life and that is really oriented to complete worship.
Mm-hmm.
And not the kind of evangelical modern USA version of worship, like every act, every breath, every like work, every word, every thing, and just a really program is not the right word. It's a really predictable
lifestyle,
right? It was interesting to be kind of like in the dining room where every, you know, like the table is kind of made out of marble and that has been taken from some Roman temples, like, and repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
Pagan temples have been repurposed and made into monastery dining room tables, and how they needed to kneel while they ate. So they couldn't like actually sit down to a meal. They had to be kneeling while they ate so that they could eat prayerfully. Like, this is the kind of discipline that we're talking about.
Like, and to sit in a posture over their food as a means for gratitude for what they're eating as scripture was being read.
While they're eating,
so that they don't focus too much on the enjoyment and pleasure of what they're eating. And I was like, I bet their food had no salt on it.
There was no Tabasco.
None.
There was no ketchup, which is like my thing. They had no ketchup. So what else can you do? If you don't have ketchup, all you can do is pray.
Fun fact about my husband, it does not matter how nice the restaurant is, how great the quality of steak that he puts into his mouth. He's like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to need ketchup.
Just so you know, though, like, there's people right now saying me too.
And God bless all of them. You.
There's a lot of people going, okay, I'm on board with that. Me too.
There's no judgment for me. It's just a fun fact.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fun fact.
I think the monks, I think it's safe to say they did not have ketchup. And definitely probably not salt.
Certainly. You're probably right.
But I'm here to be corrected, if so. And can we talk about the bread bowl, dough, bread?
Oh, man, this is like as big as like several bathtubs.
Yeah, she said enough for 100 people. The loaves of bread had to feed 100 people a day.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool.
Mm-hmm. I loved all of it.
I need to whittle me a tree trunk and make a bread bowl, dough bowl.
I mean, that would have took a while. That was so big.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
The views from there, man, otherworldly, like heavenly. that's the top of the, you know, the high point on the island, and looking down into the bay out at the ocean, and it's blue and everything is just gorgeous and the sea is still, and
we got to go up to the bell tower.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, just so beautiful. And then our way back down, there was just one lone little dove.
I know.
In the corridor.
I took a video of it. It's on our post.
Yeah.
That just felt, I don't know. It just felt like, of course. Of course. Like this little white bird.
Mm-hmm.
As we're leaving, this little white bird is just sitting there. And, it was just a beautiful, serendipitous, little visitation.
Yeah.
From, you know, like from the Lord.
For sure.
So.
So we made our way through the monastery. We had 3.5 hours total to do this and catch our ferry. And then...
then the fun began.
Sat for 6 hours.
I think we pretty much visited every island in the... what are they? Diotokrinis? I don't remember what they're called still.
It's okay.
This whole string of islands... I think we visited everyone on the way, all the way to the biggest one, which is the southern one called Rhodes.
And they're all so beautiful.
In their own special little way. Mm-hmm. Even though we are docked for 10 minutes and then back to sea. But one thing we should mention is that the sea had a completely different character leaving than it did coming in. Like, our boat was actually rocking.
Oh, yeah. She...
like, wow. Sort of like, okay, I'm getting the picture here with, like, mm-hmm. with Paul.
Right.
And not like we're in a storm, but like, okay, when the ocean has got bigger waves and your boat is, like, you really are kind of, like, rocking back and forth. It's a little unsettling.
Right. Going against the wind is, it's a... different kind of sail altogether.
So once again, it like made sense how they got around and how they kind of tried to stay in between islands and how they tried to navigate in ways that wouldn't pull them into an open sea storm. And it just made all kinds of sense how they traveled. And we made our way. It took, like you said, it took 6 hours for us to get to Rhodes. And we were there very briefly. Rhodes is named in the 21st chapter of Acts as one of the places that Paul stopped. We probably weren't there any longer than him. In fact, he was probably there longer than us. We were just passing through, but it looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of looked like a place that I was like, I wish we had a minute.
Yeah.
Just a lot of Roman history there. And, but we didn't have that kind of time. We needed to catch flights, which we did, back to Athens. And then we had to wait a minute and catch another flight to Heracleion, which is the capital city of Crete. And we eventually got to our hotel and kind of got ourselves in bed around 2. And that was awesome. I wish we could have more of those kinds of days.
No way, Jose.
Very tiring.
I don't even remember making it into the bed last night. I'm just glad I did.
Yeah, me too.
And then up early.
And what was waiting for us was this enchanted island called Crete.
Yeah.
Unexpected. Truly unexpected beauty.
I didn't realize that Greece had as many mountains as they as it does.
Uh-huh.
And then each of the islands, too, just beautiful, beautiful mountains. Oh, my gosh. Some of the most beautiful countryside, I think, I've seen the whole... Well, I can't remember everything right now. But today was... there was just a special kind of beauty.
It was enchanting.
Yeah, so the way some of the crops were laid out looked like beautiful patchwork. Reminded me a little bit of the hills of Rwanda.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a beautiful, beautiful island. So we had to get up early, and we had a long day. Like, we went from north all the way to the South Sea, like to the open Mediterranean coast. And we began, like, genuinely immersing ourselves for a couple of hours in the kind of history of the island of Crete and the Minoan culture. So, like, we went to this city called Knossos, which is one of the most ancient modern civilized cities in the world. But, like... this is like 9,000 years old when this began. And we went through a lot of history on those people. And that was not specifically like this biblical thing, other than it's like a lot of orientation to who the people all around the Bible were.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that, like, some of that to be really, truly fascinating. Like, looking at, like, olive oil was their kind of crop that made them wealthy and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And to see those giant, giant, intact vats that are, like, 4,000 years old, and they're huge, like
huge.
bigger than you, taller than you.
Well, that's not saying a whole lot, but they're bigger than the stone vats in Cana
by far,
and those held the water, that the first miracle of Jesus where water was turned to wine, and those boogers are, I thought those were hefty in size.
They are. But these were really big and really impressive.
Yeah.
And how they were built so that, it took multiple people to carry, but...
And there was a whole cellar, a whole storehouse with these situations built to hold these vats of olive oil. Can you imagine how many olives it took to fill one vat, let alone hundreds? I mean, this palace that we're talking about was how many square foot?
It was 230 something thousand square feet. Just a little cottage there on the ocean.
Just a little love shack tucked away
on this little island. Yeah. Fascinating. But so much of Western civilization has so much of its origins there. And that was really interesting to learn.
It
and
really
come
was,
to understand.
It was fascinating, the ingenuity that went into it. Way above its time.
So far, like, we think of Roman Empire engineering, and that's so old, but we see their aqueducts and water systems and developments, only to realize, oh, wow, these guys were doing that 4,000 years before Rome.
Right.
And yeah, it was like, okay, I just never, wow. And then to find out, these people do make an appearance, not just associated with the Apostle Paul, but in the Old Testament, they were like, so Cretes in the Old Testament was known as Caphtor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the Caphtorites. And when that was said, I was like, ding, ding, ding. And I looked at you and I was like, I think that's the Philistines.
You did.
And so we like looked that up, and sure enough, like these are the sea people that, you know, in some way became the Philistines, that were like the arch nemesis of the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
From the island of Crete. And so even though they may have kind of banded together with other sea people and might have been like more pirate kind of situations, they like, it was like, wow, I have been so fascinated with the Philistines for so long now. Mm. And that happened only from going to Israel. And I couldn't tell you why, other than like, obviously David and Goliath and just kind of knowing all these stories. But there were these five major cities in Israel that were, you know, city states or kingdoms were of the Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going on a quest to visit all of them. And I just understand them. Like Gath, where Goliath comes from, is this massive archaeological site.
Mm-hmm.
Ekron is barely an archaeological site. But all of these different places. The only one I haven't been to is Gaza. And I mean, like, there's nothing... There was nothing to see there, but Gaza's pretty well, you know, like destroyed. So, mm-hmm. But that was a Philistine city. But like Ashdod. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've seen them all. So just to make that connection with the Old Testament all the way here in Crete was like, wow. That I did not see coming. That I did not know.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of things that have happened during this trip that have happened like that. We're chasing the book of Acts. We're chasing the letters in the New Testament, only to find out, wow, these people do actually appear and were all around the development during the earlier chapters of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And so, like the Hittites way back in Cappadocia.
Yeah.
You know, and just finding those people, which ended up being Galatia, and just those connections. And then being here and going, wow, these are the Caphtorites who in some way became the Philistines. Huge, huge connection point. Now I know.
Now you know.
Now you know. Now we all know. Now we'll never read that name again, the Caphtorites, when we come across it in the Bible without knowing where they came from.
Right.
And we're sitting here right now, where they came from. But we were here chasing the Apostle Paul and the letter to Titus, because Paul came to Crete mm-hmm. a couple of times. One time, he came with Titus to bring the gospel. And a community was planted, and Titus was left to build it, to be the bishop, to be the pastor, and to raise up leaders, and to keep the gospel moving forward on the, well, to the Cretans.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul sends a pastoral letter back to Titus, which is what we have in the New Testament. Titus, the letter to Titus, to give him apostolic authority, but to also instruct him on like what these leaders, like what the qualities are that they are going to need, and how to ordain them and how to build them up. And so as it turns out, Titus becomes the first bishop on the island of Crete. And the Bible's not explicit on exactly where on the island of Crete this happens, but we found it. Mm-hmm. And it's like a super ancient tradition, so it's not like just symbolic. This is real. It was a major, like the seat of power for the Roman Empire in this province was called Gortina. A massive seat of power and governance and judgment. Like, this was where the power was held.
Mm-hmm.
To did not know that and was not expecting like a major like archaeological site.
Yeah.
Like what we visited, but then there's the Basilica of St. Titus.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is like where that happened, like where this was, where this all began.
Yeah.
And so that was cool, right down to the fact that Titus was buried there, like died and was buried there.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, really touching that was very, very meaningful. Not just in touching a piece of the Bible, but seeing it contextually. Of course, this is where they would have gone. Like Paul went to the power, you know, to the main place among the Cretans and began to build community around the message of Jesus, and then trusted and left Titus to continue that work forward. And his and that work still reverberates until today. Like it absolutely Christianized the island eventually. And so Titus is associated with this island. Like the islanders all know like Titus. And I don't know. That expanded my view of Paul's letter to Titus. What did you think about that place?
I loved the remains of the basilica. Just the stone, it's so stark and so simple, but so beautiful to me. Kind of bummed it's roped off. You can't go in.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you know, I get a little geeked out over the olive trees. Like, they're such ancient.
Super ancient.
The trunks are just massive. Sort of equivalent to the ones in Jerusalem.
I don't think I've seen any that old other than in Jerusalem.
Same. But this wasn't... It wasn't just that the trunk was so much bigger. It was that the tree itself was so prolific and still budding olives. And he said that these are some of the most ancient olive trees in all of Greece.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular region. So I, of course, I got kind of excited about that.
I love
that
too. I love that he showed us this,
the carob.
There was like this. Oh, we did see so many things. Palm trees, carob trees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what other kind of trees, but just a lot of different trees. But it was the Roman column. Like there's this Roman column and an olive tree from that back that like has grown up with the column in it, like all around the like encompassing and assimilating the column into the tree. And this is a Roman column from the Roman Empire.
And the thing that I loved about that was he was so excited to show us that.
But it was cool.
And he said that he had a surprise for us. And like, I think the driver unveiled that discovery to him. And it was so sincere and endearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so unexpected to see.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really precious. It felt like just a little gift.
Yeah.
That they were so happy to show us.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that really struck me today at the same place was the law that was inscribed
right
on the stone
right
in the corridor.
Yes, the laws of Gortynia. Yeah, intact,
perfectly intact
on the wall, like on a wall. Unbelievable. That was unbelievable.
Yeah. It made me think of Moses coming off the mountain with the stone tablets, and it just, so many little tiny fascinating facts that then you go, I won't be able to see that the same way. Mm-hmm. Like the symbolism of the bull back at the palace today. That was quite eye-opening. We can talk about that another time. But even we talked about the size of the palace, 230-something thousand square foot. But they had, this was so meticulously laid out and engineered that they had to position it the right way for the sunlight to enter and hit all of the right spots of the palace. And there's a west entrance, an east entrance, a north and a south, and they all have very specific meanings, symbolism, and functions. But he kept talking about the light all throughout that today. And I don't have any profound insight, but it just, the way that he kept talking about, you have to use your imagination. There's so many mysteries here, so many secrets that they want to tell, and puzzle pieces that if you look, you'll find. And, you know, some of it was just a bit of presentation. But it really did strike me. They had to know what they were doing to light the palace and how much they depended on. Oh, this was the other thing. The people, I can't remember the name of the people that were there.
The Minoans.
Yes. They were observers. So they observed all of their surroundings. They observed nature, the earth, the stars, like everything that God gave us, that he created, that if we paid attention, we could live off of and utilize. So he was talking about how they observed and then how they engineered and utilized what they observed and how it all worked together. And so that, like, something even as specific as winter solstice, the shortest day of the year with the longest night, just changed everything for them. But what it made me think about, just because he kept focusing on the aspect of light, is how dependent they were on light for this entire castle, palace, not castle. It just made me think about Jesus saying that he is the light of the world. No profound connection, just like, just an observation. Just something I'll mull over and process and just think, like, Jesus could have walked in here and lit the palace up.
It was just 5,000 years before he came, but
Exactly. And just that there's some things that happened there that ended up in the Bible. So they were either very conducive of that time period. They were just what was happening in society and culture then, that played out, how they're influenced by the Egyptians.
Just a lot.
Learning the context. And boy, do I wish we would all learn the context.
Wow, we have one more thing to talk about. So let's talk about it quick, because we have had a couple of days to catch up on, but we're going super long. We left Cortina, which was destroyed by an earthquake eventually. And just like got on this little road and drove across these mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably beautiful.
Yep.
And I was so proud of you.
Why?
You were so brave. Those kind of roads used to scare the daylights out of you.
Yeah.
And they didn't. You were so brave. I was so proud of you.
Aw, thank you. I don't think I was any more brave other than it's the cliffs with no guardrails.
Yeah.
That really freaked me out.
Yeah.
I guess they just don't as much anymore.
The countryside, like the Cretan mountains and countryside, unbelievable. Just unbelievably beautiful.
Stunning.
So we had to cross these mountains to get to the south shore, basically to all the way from Heracleion in the north shore all the way to the south shore to visit a place called Fair Havens.
Ah, oh, that was so lovely.
Right on the ocean. And so Fair Havens is seen in Acts chapter 27. And this is the other time that Paul like ends up on Crete. And this is a brief stay. He had appealed to Caesar, and so he is on his way to Rome to be judged by the emperor. And on his way, Fair Havens is a stop because the weather has not been cooperative. And so they stop in Fair Havens, and they are waiting for suitable weather to get somewhere else where they can maybe winter, because they're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in Fair Havens waiting for things to get better. And there's a town there, and it's called Lycia, and that's named in the New Testament. And there's a cave that Paul stayed in while they're just kind of waiting it out.
Tiny little cave.
Another tiny little cave. And we got to go in that cave.
Yeah, that was pretty epic.
And that is in the middle of nowhere. Like, that is not it's a pilgrimage site, but it's not like you cannot roll up in there with a bunch of, there's no way to get there easy.
Mm-mm.
So you can't roll up in there with a bunch of buses. It's just complicated to get to.
No, because standing up there, we could look down and see the water. There's this beautiful cove. And I wanted to just run down that hill.
Yeah.
And go put my feet in the water. But the terrain was a little too tedious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But man, was that lovely up there.
So there's a very small chapel up there, and then the cave, St. Paul. We went in there, we took some pictures, and that's in our post for today. And that felt like a place that we got to that is the road less traveled.
For sure.
And that we went there intentionally. And as that story goes, they decide they're going to leave Fair Havens for another harbor to winter. And Paul tells them, this is not going to work. And the Roman soldier and the boat owners, override Paul. And they leave anyway. And ultimately what happens is that they get a nor'easter and they get caught in a major storm. And they do not make it somewhere where they can ride out the winter in the way that they planned. And they are out in the open sea. And it results in a massive shipwreck that is told in the book of Acts. And they end up on the island of Malta, which is where we will be spending our time trying to get to tomorrow. So from Fair Havens, we could sort of see where Paul was and imagine him saying, like, guys, we should not leave here, only to leave and get caught in a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there, maybe that's where we should end, because man, has that not been every single one of our stories?
Mm.
We should not leave here because we're going to get blown away and shipwrecked if we do. But we don't listen. And we'll explore that shipwreck when we get to where it happened. Over these next couple of days. But I thought that was a beautiful view, a serene view, a rare view to be there where the Apostle Paul was in Fair Havens.
It really was.
And yeah, that's where we ended. Then we came back.
One more thing
mm-hmm.
that I saw along the way,
mm-hmm.
or we saw along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That is so precious and endearing to me.
Yeah.
Some of these landscapes, you can't see a human or a house for miles.
Mm-hmm.
But you see this beautiful patchwork. There might be beautiful crops, perfect rows of olive trees or grapes. But then just dotted in the middle of nowhere on a mountain is a little chapel, a little church.
Yeah.
And there's several of them
mm-hmm.
along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see two from where we were standing at St. Paul's. St. Paul's Basilica here?
No. Like the Cave of St. Paul.
The Cave of St. Paul. I'm sorry. Yes. So the tour guide tells us that, going along with what you were saying about the storm, what happened with these churches, when you see a church that's erected out in the middle of nowhere, this church has been erected because something miraculous took place
mm-hmm.
in this area. And in many of these instances, someone along the journey in a boat on that water got stuck in an unforeseeable storm
mm-hmm.
and their life was in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they made it to shore, the first thing they would do was stop and go upon the shore and give thanks to God.
Yeah.
For making it through the storm.
Right.
And then a church would be erected in that area,
mm-hmm.
facing the direction of the water.
Yeah.
To honor and commemorate that they made it through the storm.
That's beautiful.
I love that.
I loved
so
it
much.
Too. And that, I think, friends, is where we need to leave off for today. And thank you for your prayers. Thank you for journeying with us. And we have, like, the next place is to go to where that ship ended up and explore the shipwreck on the island of Malta. And so we'll look forward to sharing that with you tomorrow-ish. We got to get there.
Or today.
I mean, like, we'll be back to probably share, like, just the journey. That's we've got to get there, and then we'll experience it. But we'll be back talking together with you soon. And so we love you. I'm Brian.
I'm Jill.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Hello, this is your brother and... And I got shouting news for you, DAB family, chronological family. My wife, Rosa, got her PET scan today, and the results came back normal. There is no cancer. There's no stomach cancer. There's no kind of cancer. Well, God, hallelujah, Jesus. Oh, Lord, thank you. And DAB chronological family, I thank you for praying for my wife. God is a healer. God identified himself as a healer. And I thank God for y'all and your prayers. Thank you so much.